Welcome to the latest episode of American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, legends, and lore of America's past. Hosted by Cody Beck and Troy Taylor, our first season explores the hauntings of Alton, Illinois, one of the most haunted small towns in America. The old Mineral Springs Hotel, located in the heart of Alton's historic downtown, is just one of the countless buildings in the city that is rumored to be haunted by ghosts from the past. It is a place where remnants of yesterday linger into the present in more ways than one. Even though no one has stayed the night in the former hotel in decades, many traces of the hotel still remain, including guest rooms that now house shops, once exquisite tile floors, and even the hotel's original safe, which still boasts the lingering aroma of tobacco from the cigars that were stored there by the Mineral Springs Tobacco Shop years ago. One almost expects to see ghosts in clothing from the 1920s walking through the lobby or lingering at the hotel bar because, well, according to some, they still do. The Mineral Springs Hotel opened in 1914 and was the most spectacular hotel in Alton's history. Early advertising boasted that the hotel featured the largest swimming pool in Illinois, mineral spring cures, and the biggest dining table in the city of Alton, which was said to seat 26 people. There was a restaurant, coffee shop, mineral baths and massages, and much more. The city had never seen anything like the place, but it was no surprise that it had been created by two of the wealthiest and most powerful men in Alton. The hotel was constructed by August and Hermann Luhr, two German immigrants and successful meat packers who intended to open an ice storage plant on the property in 1909. But when workmen began drilling a well for an ice making and cold storage facility, they discovered a natural spring under the ground. The water from the spring had a strong sulfur smell, and legend claimed that a chemist declared it to have medicinal qualities. He is said to have recommended that the Luhr brothers build a health spa on the site instead of a building for storing ice. Construction was started in October 1913 with the building of a water bottling plant in what became the lowest sub-basement of the building, which was about five levels below the street. The hotel was literally built on top of it, layer by layer, opening for business the following June. The finished structure was in an Italian villa style, covered in a beige stucco with a tile roof. The ornate interior contained terrazzo floors, marble staircases, decorated plaster cornices, and art glass throughout. It was an elaborate and luxurious and an immediate success, especially after the two mineral baths opened, drawing people from all over the Midwest. The water was said to have caused remarkable cures for all sorts of ailments and restored the health of every guest who came to experience it. The largest indoor swimming pool in Illinois opened in the basement and became a local attraction. There were swimming lessons, water polo contests, events for Alton orphans, and more. Thanks to savvy advertising, water from the Mineral Springs was soon being shipped to customers as far away as Memphis and New Orleans. In July 1914, the hotel was bottling and selling more than 100 bottles every day. Consumption of the water increased that year to 350 gallons every week, and the hotel boasted that its curative power equaled that of water found in Hot Springs, Arkansas. The mineral water was extolled as a cure for headaches, colds, muscle aches, and even a cure for alcoholism. A newspaper article from 1914 quoted one believer, "I know for a fact that a drink or two of it will, in the course of an hour or two, completely sober the drunkest man you ever saw." People began pouring into Alton to partake of the healing waters, and the hotel held its grand opening in September 1914. It was said that at that one point, the swimming pool attracted over 3,000 people in a season. The hotel was purchased by August Ratz in 1919, and it joined its heyday through the 1920s and 1930s. It boasted guests like Admiral Richard Byrd, the explorer who reached the North and South Poles by air, and actress Marie Dressler, who came to Alton to promote Liberty Loans. By then, the hotel had hired an orchestra to play on Sunday afternoons and for dining in the evenings. Fraternal orders, organizations, school groups, and others held banquets and dances at the hotel, and it became the social center of Alton for many years. But time was not kind to the old place. Eventually, government agencies forced the hotel to stop bottling the water and making unsubstantiated claims about its healing powers. The tourists stopped coming, and the once grand rooms began to be rented to transients on a weekly and even monthly basis. In 1971, the Mineral Springs Hotel closed for good, and the deterioration of it caused it to be condemned. The roof leaked in many areas, and the ceiling had collapsed in others. In 1978, though, it was restored and turned into a mall that offered shops, offices, and restaurants. Since that time, it's been through several different owners and has become, more or less, a fixture in Alton. Once the place reopened in the late 70s, stories began to be told about the hotel, although these stories had nothing to do with miracle cures, mineral baths, or the golden years of the building. These stories had to do with ghosts. There are a number of ghosts said to haunt the Mineral Springs, from former guests to staff members who simply never left. Many of them are tall tales, legends with no basis in fact, but others, well, they're not so easy to dismiss. Perhaps the most eerie spot in the building is the old swimming pool in the basement. While some of the stories that surround it are fanciful at best, there seems to be little question that the pool is haunted. Footsteps are often heard in the empty room, and more than one person has been touched by unseen hands while standing near the pool, or have seen the apparition of a person who shouldn't be there. One former staff member had a strange encounter with the pool when he walked down the stairs to the basement and heard water splashing from the other side of a closed and locked door. Knowing that he was alone in the building, he quickly stepped into the room and turned on the light. When he did, he discovered the pool area was empty. However, when he looked down, he saw a line of wet footprints leading away from the pool, crossing several feet of concrete, and then disappearing. Oh, and I should probably mention the pool hasn't contained water in decades. It had a serious crack in the bottom after it was drained in 1971, and it's never had water in it again. The most famous ghost story of the Mineral Springs is that of the Jasmine Lady. The stories say that she's haunted the main staircase in the lobby for many years. While few can agree on what ended her life on the staircase, some say she fell, others say she was pushed, most believe that she died on the stairs and has never left them. During the years when the hotel was still in operation, staff members and guests sometimes caught glimpses of a woman on the staircase or felt someone push past them, even though no one was there. Footsteps were often heard on the marble stairs or the rustle of a woman's dress as she hurried past. But most famous about the lady is her smell, a pungent perfume of jasmine flowers that lingers for a moment and then disappears. The mysterious smell has been experienced by countless people over the years, from ghost hunters to the most skeptical of business owners who rented out portions of the building. Many who smell the perfume have no idea that the former hotel is haunted until they read about it later and realize they may have come face to face, so to speak, with the hotel's most famous resident ghost. These may be the best-known hauntings of the Mineral Springs, but they're not the only ones. The ghosts of the staircase and the swimming pool do not walk these corridors alone. Hotels are notorious for the ghosts that have been left behind. Imagine, if you will, just how many people pass through a hotel in a single year. Then consider how many guests an old hotel might boast after decades in operation. It's not hard to imagine that there might be a ghost or two around, or many in some locations. The Mineral Springs seems to be no exception to this rule. It's a strange and mysterious location that has earned a place of honor in Haunted Alton.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? And I don't mean like spells or incantations to trap spirits, you weirdos. I mean like a new language that could help you start communicating with more people on this plane today. Then I need to tell you about Rosetta Stone. Look, you know the brand, you know the name. They have the expertise and a 30-year legacy, which makes them more qualified than ever to help you learn a new language today. They've helped millions of people build the fluency and confidence to speak new languages. Now, this is the part where Troy would tell me that I made some kind of grammatical error, but he's not here right now, so like, I don't know, let's like speak in tongues. Rosetta Stone focuses on speaking practice for real-life scenarios to get you ready for real conversations with real people. Or maybe you can even learn how to use some different types of Ouija boards. I don't know. Either way, Rosetta Stone can help you learn faster and retain your new language better. Honestly, Rosetta Stone really would have come in handy for season 4 of New Orleans, because I know we butchered some of those French names, and I apologize once again. Now, you all know I have a 9-to-5 job when I'm not at the Podcast Factory, and Rosetta Stone actually helped me not make a total fool out of myself while I was in Brazil interviewing celebrities. Obrigado. And now I want to help you.
So don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, American Hauntings podcast listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today.
Rosetta Stone, how language is learned. Wait, by the way, Troy, like, where do words come from? Hey, no, don't walk away. Oh, Troy, where do words...
There's one thing that the American Hauntings podcast knows about, and that's mothers. We featured a lot of great mothers in a lot of our episodes. Pearl Curran, Julia Lemp, Sarah Moore, Marie Laveau, Jane Mansfield, Tamsin Donner, Delphine LaLaurie, Belle Gunness. Okay, maybe leave out those last two. But what I'm saying is that with Mother's Day coming soon, you need a truly special gift for your mom because, well, she's not Belle Gunness. So let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that literally turns your mom's life story into a book. So here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send your mom a question in her email, the same way she sends you questions about your dating life or when you plan to give her grandkids. Anyway, these can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. She replies by either typing in the answers or by recording her own voice. Then MyLifeInABook.com compiles all her responses into a keepsake book, and they can create an audiobook that uses her voice recordings, preserving her voice and her stories forever. As anyone who doesn't have their mom around anymore can tell you, having your mother's stories about growing up, being a kid, and overcoming life's challenges will be something that you and your kids will treasure. And let's be honest, your mom has given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a very cool way to share them. Honestly, I decided to try this out for myself, and I sent it to my mom, and she's not exactly a whiz at computers, but she still found it really easy to use. My mom might have had a little more unusual childhood than a lot of mothers do, so I'm really glad to have this. And I think you'll be glad to give one to your mother, too. So check out MyLifeInABook.com and use the code HAUNTINGS at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use the code HAUNTINGS for 10% off today.
We're good.
Then we're good.
Yeah, that went good.
Thank you.
I think that was the one. That's the keeper.
Cool. You missed everything, but what? I'm just fucking with you. I'm just kidding. But yeah, we're good. Welcome to American Hauntings Podcast, where we discuss history, hauntings, legends, lore, and all things paranormal. You are listening to episode 2 of season 1, covering the hauntings of Alton, Illinois. I'm your co-host, Cody Beck, and with me once again, my co-host is author, historian, crime buff, and founder of American Hauntings, Troy Taylor. What's up, Troy?
Hey, how's it going? How's your week been? Mine has been very long.
So hectic.
Enough to say about that.
Stressful, to say the least.
But this is our break from the week. So we get away to do something, to talk about something that has nothing to do with anything else we do the rest of the week. Well, I shouldn't say that, I guess. But I don't actually get to sit around and just talk about it. So that's the kind of the nice
thing. Right, you got to walk and you have to lead tours.
Yeah.
And you got to tell people.
So, yeah. I guess it doesn't have, you know, nothing to do with my week, but, you know.
Well, either way, I'm glad you're here. And I just real quick want to give a quick shout out. I'm drinking a North End IPA beer from Old Bakery Brewery, Alton's Finest. And we also have some citrus wheat beer from Old Bakery. Just to be clear, they're not sponsoring us. I'm just trying to get them too.
Yes, but I've already consumed some. myself. So
no, they are delicious, and I definitely recommend them. So I'm just going to dive right in. First and foremost, I need to start with this heavy hitter question. The Mineral Springs Mall boasted the biggest dining table. What the hell is that?
I don't know. I think that in 1914, you were looking for whatever amenities you could list for your hotel.
Right.
I mean, there was no air conditioning. There was, you know, I mean, yes, they had, you know, miracle cures going on in the hotel, but, you know, as far as attracting people who didn't maybe want to use the swimming pool, having a hotel that could have a restaurant that seated 26 people at one table, I guess, was a good deal.
When I'm looking something on hotels.com or something, it's like, I'm looking, who's got the biggest table?
I know. That's, yeah, really, exactly. So, you know, when you've got the biggest swimming pool in Illinois, who needs the biggest dining room table?
That's kind of my thinking, so, but
yeah, I know.
Advertising was different back then. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, obviously. Hello. You know, obviously when it comes to water. So,
well, you're big on water. So we've already covered that. You know, speaking of the miracle cure. So July 1914, they're selling and shipping 100 bottles of spring water every day. And then they up that to 350 gallons per week. So personally, I applaud the entrepreneurship, but I'm still pissed.
Yeah, well,
because this is the issue. And one of the reasons I kind of want to start this podcast is I'm fine with mysticism and paranormal things and entertainment and all that. But I get upset when I feel that people are using that to take advantage of other people. And if you're selling it as a miracle cure, I wonder how many people weren't using real cures.
Well, yeah, but you got to, here's the thing to remember though. We're talking about 1914. There weren't a lot of real cures. I mean, medicine was not what we know of today back then. I mean, yes, there were medical schools. I mean, this wasn't like the 1800s where you read a book and went, oh, I'm a doctor, or hey, I'm a lawyer.
Right.
You know, you had to go to school for it in 1914, but people were much more open to different types of cures. There was no, in those days, there was no FDA. There was no one regulating this stuff. So you could, I mean, you know, they were putting cocaine in your Coca-Cola back then. You know what I'm saying? And it was,
that sounds great.
I mean, that, well, you could go into a drugstore and buy, you could buy cocaine, you could buy morphine. I mean, this was over the counter. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could buy, you know, pretty much any, you could buy arsenic, you know, strychnine, you know, all kinds of stuff. You could just buy it right there in the drugstore. So for people to hear that there was a water that would offer a cure, and here's the thing, again, you got to go back into this and go, okay, did it cure alcoholism? No. I mean, of course not. But the mineral content of some of the waters in the springs really, truthfully, could have eased a lot of people's ailments. Arthritis, rheumatism, that kind of thing, could be eased by the content, the mineral content in these waters. So I don't think it was a complete scam. Mm-hmm. I just think that perhaps a little overboasting was going on as to what it could cure.
Well, now my question, though, is that if these people had access to cocaine and morphine right over the counter, why were they grabbing water?
Why did they need to go to the pool? Yeah. Well, I think even by that point, people were starting to realize that might not be the best thing for them.
Trading one problem for another.
Yeah. So the water added a nice, change of pace for what was being offered. So, right. I mean, I understand what you're saying, too. And I do agree with you because, you know, if you look at the entire list from a lot of these mineral springs of the era, you know, there's no way. I mean, obviously, some of the stuff that they claim that they cured, they didn't cure.
Right.
It always reminds me when I think about any of the mineral springs, whether here or, you know, there's another one at the original Springs Hotel down in Oakville, Illinois, which is down further south from here, also another famous spring. But, and again, that was one that was lauded for curing arthritis. And really, there were a lot of people who couldn't walk and left there able to walk. So that's kind of hard to dispute. But then again, there would be that long list of other things that it supposedly cured.
Right.
And it makes me think of the guy in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, who, you know, the Crescent Hotel, he ran a cancer hospital. And I hope we do a future episode on the Crescent because it's a great story. But he claimed that he could cure cancer without surgery or radiation or anything like that. And everybody died. I mean, he was a complete quack, you know, and I think there probably was a little of of both going on with any of these springs. Right. But you gotta, again, remember how popular that kind of stuff was at the turn of the last century. Right. You know, they were all over the place. Indiana, Illinois, everybody had one.
So I think if that spring could really make a drunk man sober, they could have just, they could have kept shop right there because all the bars downtown.
Well, right. And it would have been perfect. Yeah. They just everybody just come over, have some of the water, go back and drink.
Be good to go. Yeah. So, okay. The most popular story from Mineral Springs is the Jasmine Lady. And I have to say, that sounds to me like the villain in a bad kung fu movie.
Jasmine Lady.
Right out of the gate. You've done different tours and stuff there. I actually remember when I was a lot younger in high school, I went on one of the tours with you there in Mineral Springs in the basement. The pool is actually one of the things that sticks out in my mind to this day. Can you tell me a little bit about your experiences?
Yeah,
and you have an upcoming overnight or something.
Ghost hunt coming up there soon. We do them periodically there. The Mineral Springs was always one of my favorite places on the tours. In the early, from about 1998 to 2004, most of the tours that we had here in Alton, I did myself, and which could be really exhausting in October.
Right.
But it was a lot of fun. And the Mineral Springs was always one of my favorite stops because you never knew what was going to happen. Now, I had gotten to know the guy who had owned it at that time. I knew his son pretty well. And his son had lived at the Hansen House, the Enos Sanatorium on 3rd Street. And they also had the Mineral Springs. And he had moved down into an apartment down at the Mineral Springs and had invited me down. We used to go down quite a bit and we just kind of goof around in there at night, just kind of wander around and explore the building and hang out down in the pool. And we had some really strange experiences down there. His dad did not believe in ghosts at all, but he immediately said, you know, I don't believe this. I always love stories that start, I don't believe in ghosts, but and told me about being in the building by himself in the morning, no one else there. And walking down the hall and smelling that perfume. And he said, oh, I'm sure there must be some explanation. It just, he didn't have one.
Yeah.
One of the places that we liked to go down and was, we would just hang out down there in the pool and just, you know, who knows, maybe something will happen. You know, we just hang out down there and talk. And, one night we were down there and we're just sitting down in lawn chairs in the pool, in the bottom of this big empty pool. And the door that leads into the pool and was this big heavy metal door. And so when it opened, it would scrape across the concrete floor. I mean, no way of mistaking what it was. And we're sitting down there and just heard this horrendous scrape. And that door swung open and we, you know, looked up there with flashlights pointed up there. There's nobody, nobody else in the building. So that was weird. There were other incidents that happened. There were plenty of times when we heard footsteps or noises in there. But I think one of my favorite stories about it was a buddy of mine had come along on the tour one night to kind of help, just kind of bring up the rear, keep people moving.
Yeah.
And he's a cop in St. Louis. So, and this is a guy who's, active in the military, did like 3 tours in Iraq. I mean, this is a guy who's
incredible,
has seen some things, right? And you know, is a credible guy. And he was helping us kind of round people up because, you know, I'd bring everybody in there and, you know, shut off all the lights so they could see how dark it was. And then let people look around a little bit, you know, take some pictures and stuff. And my friend Dave was kind of standing over by the door and kind of helping me try to keep an eye on where everybody was. And so time was up. We had to get moving, wrap up the tour. And so we're kind of getting everybody together. And Dave said he looked up and he saw one of the people in the group went down a hallway off to the side of the pool, deeper into the building. So, you know, he's thinking, well, you know, they're just looking around. I'll go get them and tell them we got to get going. So Dave follows him down the hallway and he makes a turn and he makes another turn and he keeps going and he catches a glimpse of the guy going around a corner. And so he follows him into a dead end.
Mm.
There's nobody there.
He's just gone.
And, you know, he's realized that I don't know who I just followed, but whoever they are, they've just vanished and there's no doors. Everything's locked. It's a dead end. So he comes back and, you know, to meet the rest of the group. And he's just like, you know, eyes are wide. Yeah. And I'm like, what's going on? And he goes, I'll tell you about it later. I'll just tell you about it later. So, and off we went. And, later on, after everyone had gone home, he's telling me the story. And, you know, this, like I said, this is a guy who'd seen some things and he was really unnerved by what had happened. I had another friend, we were down there one night and he had seen a figure that he described. We had a whole tour group and we turned the lights off, turned the lights back on again. And I noticed my friend is going from like person to person to see what they're wearing, because he had seen a guy standing at the edge of the pool in certain clothing. And then when the lights came on, the guy was gone.
There's nobody in a 1920s tuxedo.
Nobody that looked like that. No tuxedos or anything. But he did describe it as, you know, like kind of 1940s style, you know, dress clothes and thing. But there was nobody wearing anything even close to that.
Right.
And so he was, that unnerved him. And he's not a guy who this kind of stuff bothers. He's really into ghost stuff. So,
right.
You know, so, I mean, I definitely think there's something to the hotel. I mean, for sure. And, you know, we can get into some of the stories. You know, the Mineral Springs is one of those places that has become kind of infamous for its tall tales.
Yeah.
There are a lot of stories that were invented, most of them in the early 2000s, really. It's not anything recent. It's stuff that was done years ago by people in you know, I'm going to say, who claim to be psychics. Perhaps they are. Perhaps they're not, but claim to have lots of visions about things that were in the hotel that don't match anything from history of the hotel. And so that becomes an issue. And that's going to be something that will be in almost every episode, I think, will be stories that, you know, have come up that don't necessarily have any connection to real events.
Right.
One of my favorite stories was the story that, and it just kept getting embellished when you was reminded me when you brought up the guy in the tuxedo who is supposed to haunt the pool. The story was the man in the tuxedo who haunts the pool was a man who had come there with his wife in the 1920s and he kept flirting with other women. And his wife got angry with him because apparently this is something that had been going on for some time. And she took her high-heeled shoe, and I love the detail here, took her high-heeled shoe and hit him so hard in the face with it that her heel went into his eyeball and he fell into the pool and drowned. And his angry ghost has haunted the pool ever since. Now, this was the most popular story of the early 2000s. And not a word of it is true. I mean, not a word of this story is true. There's been one drowning in the hotel pool in the 1920s. A guy named Clarence lived over in Wood River. So, and again, it's one of those things where people say ghost's name is Charlie. I don't know where that comes from either. I've literally have the newspaper article right here in front of me that says that Clarence Billick, age 21, drowned in the pool. And he was there for like a daytime, like a swimming, just open swim kind of thing, and accidentally drowned in the pool. I've never heard of any ghost named Clarence that haunt the whole, but yet that's the only guy that's died there.
Right.
So go figure.
That's the story.
Yeah, but that's the story.
So that brings up another point. You know, I've read your Haunted Alton book. I've been to Mineral Springs when I was a kid and didn't think anything of it. Then I went on your ghost tour. And started thinking of it a little bit differently, but I've been doing a lot of research for all these episodes. And so I wanted to ask you about, I had a lot of trouble finding like historical facts and information and, you know, documents and stuff for things that have happened so long ago. And so I wanted to kind of talk to you about maybe your process or like how you research things and how difficult it is to figure out, you know, separate the fact from fiction when it's an old, well, you know, 100 years ago type
story.
Well,
this is a tough one. That's a really tough one to find anything out about. As far as, I mean, a lot of buildings are easier, especially if they stay in business. This place, who knows whatever happened to the records from this place? Mm-hmm. That's the biggest trouble that I ran into. Now, there is plenty of newspaper documentation. I found tons. I mean, you can go back into the old Alton Telegraphs from the time this place opened to the time it closed, and you will find almost every day, there's something about the Mineral Springs in the paper. But most of it is either advertising, looking for jobs, you know, hiring cooks or hiring housekeepers, or it's whatever organization had an event there or a party there or a banquet or something. That's about the extent of it. There isn't a lot of bad news. This one particular guy that drowned. That's the worst story that I've ever been able to find. I mean, there may be others, but I've never been able to track them down. And I've got a pretty good archive service for that kind of thing. And there just isn't a lot of material other than just what is in the historical record of Alton. And there isn't a lot. It was at the time when it was in operation, the first, you know, couple of decades at least, it was a really popular spot. It was a very big on the social scene here because it was the biggest. I mean, there was no Beltline back there. There was no Homer Adams Parkway back then. Everything that was anything that was business in Alton was in this downtown area. And it was the big hotel. I mean, the Stratford was there as well, but it didn't offer the kinds of things that it didn't offer the kind of amenities that the Mineral Springs did. And that, you know, we laughed a little bit at the beginning of this about the water, but that was a huge draw. I mean, that brought a lot of people to town
because the world was different back then.
Yeah, the world was different. And, you know, there was, you know, we were barely into movies at that point, let alone anything else. I mean, there wasn't a lot of entertainment. So the fact that you could go out to dinner and there was a live orchestra and that kind of thing, you know, performing there, that it was a big deal. And that made it a really special night. And that's what I think was one of the big draws, more so than the hotel part of it as far as people staying there, other than people coming from outside the area. But for locals, that was what drew them to the hotel. And it is tough. It is tough to find records of that kind of, because the business records, who knows where they went? You know, they've been gone for a long, long time.
So do you ever just go on ghost tours or other people's tours around buildings and they say something about this legend or, you know, this actually happened? You just from the back just be like, no, it didn't.
Yeah. Well, I used to do that more often than I do now. I did used to do that a lot, and not just on ghost tours, at like historic sites and stuff. I would like to correct the guy.
You're just a hoot at Gettysburg.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't, it's usually not well received, which I understand.
Of course it's not.
So I kind of, once I really got into, when I got into the ghost business in the 90s, I really stopped doing that because I was imagining what it'd be like to have some smart ass like me on my tour correcting people. So yeah, that's not really something I do much. Now I will often kind of stand in the back and snicker because I know the stories aren't true,
but, right.
Or just sort of be amused, you know, by the whole thing. I was in Key West a few years ago and took, the tour and at the end, the guy said, well, you didn't seem like you enjoyed this much. And I said, no, it was great.
It was hilarious.
I said, but you know, it's what I do for a living kind of thing, you know? And so, and then that turned into a whole different conversation, but I went because I wanted to see Robert the Doll. And
I love Robert the Doll.
I know at that time, that was the only way you could see him was on this tour because they had moved him from the house where he was in town out to the old fort. And so that was the only way you could see it. So I went on the tour.
Gotcha.
But it was fun. I mean, it was always fun, you know? It's just sometimes not as accurate as
you'd
like,
hope.
Right. You'd hope.
Well, the last question I have for you, you mentioned, we talked about this in the last episode a little bit, but I'm curious, what do you think it is about hotels in particular? You know, is it the number that tend to be haunted? Is it the number of people that go through there and all the experiences and like so much energy going through one place and just so many different stories, you know, being created in one location that makes them more susceptible to hauntings? Or what do you think?
Yes. Yeah. No. Okay. I was agreeing with everything you said because I think it's a combination of so many things. You know. Okay. Take your average Hampton Inn. Okay. Mm-hmm. And let's say it's been in business for 10 years and it has 60 rooms, and during that time, let's say on an average, 40 of those rooms are filled on a daily basis, 365 days a year. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now take a hotel that's been open since, say, 1914, that was open from 1914 to, you know, 1971, that during that time had like, you know, 150 rooms and were filled for the most part in the first few decades every single day. You're talking about thousands and thousands of people. You've got energy, like you said, a lot of drama. I mean, think of the things that happen. I mean, even your average new hotel, you know how many people die in a hotel every year?
I do not.
And not even die. The depraved kind of crap that goes on in a hotel that people wouldn't do in their home. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
now,
these
now that I
are
think about it.
Places that absorb a lot of weird things. I mean, from deaths to whatever in hotels. And, you know, that leaves an impression behind. Just like we talked about in the last episode, we were talking about, you know, history leaving a mark on a place. Well, this is history plus all the people. I mean, all of the people and the energy. And I think that if it's going to leave an impression behind, that's a place where you're going to find it, is in a hotel.
Yeah.
You've got all that energy. You've got all of that kind of lingering trauma from the past. And the fact that it replays itself sometimes as a haunting really isn't that big of a surprise. If you believe in hauntings and ghosts,
right.
But, you know, when you have people who say, I don't really believe in ghosts, but, you know, here's a place that can make you a believer.
Yeah.
It's a weird spot. It's a very haunted spot. And, you know, if I had to list, you know, the top five places that are the most haunted at Alton, it's definitely in the top three. I mean, it's a very eerie spot, and mm-hmm. it can be a very eerie spot. And I think that history definitely has left a mark there.
Nice. Well, that's all I have. They're playing the house music. I think we got to wrap it up. Do you want to do your outro?
Sure. Yeah. If you like the show, go on to iTunes, give us some kind of rating, give us a comment, give us a review. Better yet, if you know people who are interested in this kind of show, spread the word. Tell them about it. We'd love to get more listeners. So anybody that you can find who might be interested in ghosts or hauntings or Alton, Illinois, even spread the word and help us keep this thing going. So thanks again. Thanks to Cody for having me in, and thanks to everybody for listening. And we'll be back for another episode in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we'll be discussing Milton Schoolhouse in 2 weeks. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
We aim to combine historic record, scientific method, observation, and imagination in order to teach you a little bit more about the paranormal activities of Alton, Illinois. American Hauntings is a bi-weekly podcast. You can hear new episodes every other Monday, so please tune in to hear our latest episode and receive a brand new paranormal history lesson. You can learn more about our podcast and find new episodes on iTunes by searching for American Hauntings or by going to AmericanHauntingsPodcast.com. where we also have some links to Troy's books, as well as information about his upcoming ghost tours and other events. As for your host, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CodyBeckSTL or at CodyBeck.com. Please say hello or tell me how much you hate the show. I promise I won't hold back because I have nothing to lose. Find Troy on Twitter at TroyTaylor13 and on Facebook by searching for the Troy Taylor author page or by going to Facebook.com/AuthorTT. You can also check him out at AmericanHauntings.net. All music was written and recorded by Charlie Brockes at Lighthouse Sounds. This episode was produced and recorded at Lighthouse Sound Studios. Find them at lighthousesounds.com.